Okay, good morning. Good morning to everybody on the phone, and good morning to everyone on the web. This is Denise Martin and Lorraine Snelling. Say hi.
Hi, I'm here.
And we'd like to welcome you to the Bridge Light Transition Series. This is part three of the Bridge Light Transition Series. And as most of you know, we've been talking about transitions of the heart, and that was kicked off with Holly Girth talking about God-sized dreams. And then we moved last week into transitions of faith with Mary DeMuth talking about finding God in thin places. And this week, I am just delighted to be here with Lorraine Snelling to take us home talking about transitions of courage and trust. So welcome, Lorraine, and welcome
Thank
to
you.
All of you for being here. So, and Lorraine, you are in Oregon, right?
I'm in the Dalles, Oregon, at my brother's house.
Oh, is it Oregon or Oregon?
Oregon.
Okay, they're just
Oregon checking. Makes you really sound like you don't know much.
Well, that would be my Texas tongue. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm just so excited that you could participate today. Thank you so much.
Me too.
Couple of things for everyone on the phone and on the web before we get started. If you would like to ask Lorraine a question, if you are on the phone, please press *2, and it will basically raise your hand on the moderator's screen that I can see so we can queue you up and be able to ask Lorraine questions. So feel free to do that at any point, and once we get into the Q&A section towards the end of this event, we'll be able to unmute your phone for you so you can talk to Lorraine directly. If you are on the web, then you will be able to type a question in, and I will be able to see that and read that on your behalf for Lorraine to answer, and we will get to that also in the order that they're received. On the web, on the attend link, there is a slide button. If you press that slide button, you'll be able to see the slides as we go through the conversation with Lorraine this morning. And then also, we will be able to send this out with the recording of Lorraine's talk today and the slides, and those will be posted for free download in a couple of days. And we'll let you know when those are available. And if you have any questions about that, feel free to give me an email or give me a shout, and I'll help you through that process. And in the meantime, we go back to looking at Ms. Lorraine. So, Lorraine, I pulled up some information from your website, and right now I'm showing people pictures of you doing a book signing, and then also there's some itty-bitty pictures that my family said nobody's going to be able to see, but I wanted to let you guys all know on the phone and on the web, this is an enticement to go to Lorraine's website to go see her pictures. There are some funny, funny, funny photos. And, Lorraine, I didn't pull them up, but that one of you in a bonnet, I was so tempted.
You mean a little doughboy?
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very courageous.
We don't tell people that that's me very often.
That's a very courageous picture. there's a great picture, too, of what I'm now calling the John Madden bus.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, so that's how you travel around the country, right?
That is how we travel. It's just really not a sacrifice.
Oh, it's huge. It's a big bus, and I would recommend anybody get off the road if they're behind that thing. So that's very big. But I did want to recommend that you go to the website this morning, too, because I'm going to take us to the next slide. Again, it's a very, very busy slide. And my family said, well, can't you just show, like, one book that's kind of representative of you know, what she's doing? And I said, no, you guys don't get that. That's a series. Each one of these books is actually a series, and there's a lot behind it. So, I know people with me are going to be laughing because they all know that. But when you get a chance, you can go and again, on the website, and you can see all the different books in the series, and they're just absolutely delightful. I'll tell you that the Dakota Treasure, what is it, Lorraine, the Dakota Treasures? Isn't that how you say that?
Yeah, Dakota Treasures is the one with Ruby.
Yeah, I think that's got to be some of my favorite. My dad, I think, is listening in today, and he thoroughly enjoyed Ruby, getting a
I did too. That was
a brothel
fun.
Of an inheritance. Yeah.
Yeah, I set out to write humor on that one and really enjoyed it. It's City Mouse Comes to the Country. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is just a fabulous series, and we thoroughly enjoyed it. And to be honest, my Texas tongue doesn't always do all those Norwegian names, so I could pronounce all those names. It was very exciting. So, but But also I wanted to highlight, too, that you have taken up painting. And I've pulled a couple of the things off of your website to invite people to go and look at some of the artwork. You now have it posted for availability for people, right?
Right.
So, Lorraine, I did not expect sea turtles. I was expecting buffalo and prairies and stuff.
So. I don't know, but what's funny is that the turtles are being the most popular.
I love
them. I'm amazed.
Yeah.
I do, too. They're so much fun to paint. And I just received another picture of one this morning. I'm thinking, ooh, that one's going to be good.
Wow, just incredible.
Yeah,
so, and then there's,
it's fun.
You've got the cookbooks, and then I also found this, and I'll share this with all of you. I asked Lorraine, I said, was this always up on the website? And she said, yes, and I missed it. There is an FAQ, you know, Frequently Asked Questions with Lorraine, that I found to be an absolute delight on her website, and I put the link up on the slide. And invite you to go and read that because that was a lot of fun for me. And also, I put the link to Blessing North Dakota. Can you tell us a little bit about Blessing North Dakota?
Well, the people in the original series of the Red River series, and about the third book, voted for the name of their town. And they tried to keep the women from voting because, you know, women didn't vote back in the 1880s. And the women got a little bit irate, and the men realized that if they had any brains at all, they'd better let their wives vote. And so they proposed the town named of Blessing, and so that's what was voted in. And then Drayton, North Dakota is near where Blessing would be if Blessing were real. And they decided to adopt Blessing as part of Drayton, and Drayton as part of Blessing. So there is now Blessing Square and all kinds of Blessing things in Drayton. And so we've just created this little town, and I just say now it's Blessing, North Dakota is where fiction becomes reality. And people travel North Dakota looking for Blessing, and they go out in the fields looking for Blessing. And it's kind of fun. It's crazy and wild and just delightful fun.
What is, and they're doing a play based on the Blessing book, several of them, right?
Pardon me?
They've got a play that they're doing.
Right. It was presented for 2 years now, and it was called Bound for Blessing. And we're not sure if they're going to present it again or not. It's an awful lot of hard work. So we'll see. I don't know. I hope they do. Or other places could buy the play and present it there. It's part of this whole thing is, I tell people, you know, come on, join the adventure. It is an adventure because I don't know where God's taking it all. And so we just keep going along, and he opens another door, and we go through it, and you never know. So I just go along for the adventure.
No, well, it's just incredible. So I invite everyone to go to the website. There's also some nonfiction. There's all kinds of materials for writers. And, you know, Lorraine also does writers' workshops and teaches quite a bit. So she's just been a very rich, rich career in this entire field, and we're all blessed because of it.
Thank you.
So, but, Lorraine, I'm going to take you into the hard stuff.
Okay.
I know. So we're going to... Because, you know, we...
He said with great enthusiasm.
Yeah, I know. Well, initially, when Holly and I started this, we thought, ooh, we're going to save some of these questions for Mary. And then Mary and I got into some stuff, and we went, ooh, we're going to save some of these for Lorraine. So,
oh, good. I see.
Yeah. So when we started talking about God-sized dreams and what does that really look like, and we talked about how do you know it's a God-sized dream. And then last week with Mary, we spoke about if God is silent, how do we even know what to do? And when we need to hear more than ever, how do we hold on to that when things are darker? And then I think what we wanted to do is that really kind of goes right into the segment with you this week, which is the three questions we would kind of want to cover over the next few minutes, next 30 minutes or so, is the question, how do I trust that God is really with me? And what do I do when I'm just really afraid? And where do I even start? So that's the kinds of things we want to try to discuss with you today.
Okay.
And it seemed fitting because so many of your characters are your heroines or heroines. They start out on a journey, and they hop on a train or a wagon, in your this homesteaders and pioneer women that you
mm-hmm.
write about.
Right.
And they were so tough, and they're not necessarily sure where they're going, it doesn't seem in your book. So how can we do that type of thing today in our world?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we don't, I think most people or many people don't look at faith and growth in Christianity, you know, growth in love really, are, you know, are a journey. And yet they are. You know, we're all on a journey. And, you know, where we go and what we do is not always up to us, but what we do with where we're taken is up to us. And so, you know, we choose what kind of a reaction we're going to have. And we'll think, you know, like when our daughter died, I could not have told somebody, I'm going to choose not to grieve. Well, you know, that's pretty silly. So you react because of who you are and because of what's going on, but God does not leave us. And when we're looking at this, how do I trust that God is with me? That's the very basis of faith, is how do I trust that? And so I believe that that's where God says to us over and over again. He said to the Israelites, remember, remember, remember. And he said, you know, put it on your doorposts, put it on your foreheads. And that same admonition comes to us. Because when we're first starting out and we're, you know, either very young or just very young in the faith, God seems to be right there with us all the time. I mean, we're just as close as, and it seems that way. But he is not the one that changes. And that's the part that we forget. If I feel God isn't near me, he didn't change. He said, I am the same. And I never change. I am Alpha, Omega. I don't change. And his promise is, I will always be with you. So we get so hung up on feelings. How do I feel that God is near me? That isn't the point. Trust comes because we know that he is with us. He said so. He doesn't lie. He doesn't change. And so you go back to the Bible and just keep reading the stories over and over and over again about how he was with his people. And if he doesn't change, if he did that for them, why would he not do it for me? And that was a question I really struggled with. Okay, if he says this, why would it be different for me? So if I have these doubts in my mind, they're not from him. You know, we know where those kinds of things come from. So you just tell the other guy to butt out and leave you alone. And, you know, Jesus told us to say that. He says, you know, Satan, get thee behind me. Well, I don't want him behind me either. Thank you very much. I can't see him then. So just get out. You know, take your all your friends and your cohorts and just leave, because God told me I could tell you that. And boy, do I believe in that. I tell it a lot.
Wow. It's really powerful stuff. And I think that's the hard part, don't you think, Lorraine, though, sometimes when you said that why wouldn't God do it for us if he did it for them? But sometimes I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm not a Joseph. I'm not a Esther. I'm not one of those people.
Except that they didn't start. When we read about him so much, they're, you know, he's already got them moved along. You know, he didn't start out. Now, when you go back to other people like Moses, who is saying, you know, I don't want any part of this, God. Burning bush? I don't care. What do you mean, take my shoes off? You know, I can't go. I can't even talk decent. You know, God, come on. You don't really expect me to do things like that. And he tried, and Jonah tried to run away, and all of these things, and God just kept right on working with him. Okay, we're going to get you here. We're going to get you here. And it doesn't depend on feelings. It depends on faith and trust. And faith and trust are choices we make. I hear people say, well, you know, I have to get a divorce because I just don't love that person anymore. Baloney. Love is a choice. It isn't a feeling. I mean, it feels good. But it is the primary basis of love and of trust is a choice. I will choose to do this. And I have there's been so many instances in my life where it was God is saying to me, and all right, this is confession time, I guess, but I have gotten so tired of hearing him say to me, Lorraine, are you going to trust me? And I'm thinking, well, if I say no, that's not too smart, you know? And so I'm thinking, okay, what are my choices? Well, my choice is to either trust you or not. Well, can you figure anything better than trusting, even if you can't see the road? So then I'm right back to square one. I say, okay, I'm going to trust you. I will trust you. I am trusting you. I am trusting you. I'm walking this way, and I'm trusting you. And please, I hope you don't have to keep saying to me, well, Lorraine, are you going to trust me? Because I really want to do that before he has to remind me.
Well, Lorraine, what about if you just say, well, I'm trying to trust you? Does that count?
You know, a pastor friend of mine years ago said, and this has stuck with me all of my life, Lord, make me willing to be willing.
Hmm.
I'll think about that. You know, because, yeah, I am trying. Okay. And so, you know, when little kids are learning to walk, you know, they didn't get up and run at first. They just stumbled and they sat down on their little butts and they screamed and they cried and mommy picked them up and dusted them off. And, you know, we kept on walking. And it's the same with us. And if I keep that kind of a picture in my mind, knowing that he is not going to leave me, he will never leave me. In the darkest days after Marie died and we were just so devastated, I couldn't say to him, okay, God, I know you're, I know you're here with me. I did not feel like he was. And I can't remember saying to him, why would you leave me now? And the answer came back, who says I left you?
Hmm.
You know, he didn't leave. But my feelings were so clouded with grief that I couldn't really see him. But I knew, absolutely down deep knew, he said, I will never leave you. He said, I will walk with you through the valleys. I will do this. I will carry you. I will love you. And I keep going back to the promises like those in the Bible. And I have my whole long lists of promises. And I dig them up and I say, okay, this is what you said. I am trusting that you're still living up to your word. And this is what you're saying to me.
Wow.
And it's a choice. It's a choice. Just like being afraid. Okay, people say, well, and the one that you know, that just the classic one is, well, you know, God made me the way I am, and he made me a worrier, and I, you know, and I just can't quit worrying. Well, again, it's a trust. Are you going to trust? Are you going to believe God at his word and trust it when he says, I will take care of all things that you are concerned about? And so that's a choice again, and that choice is back to practice. You know, I tried learning to play the piano, and a teacher said to me, Lorraine, you don't want to learn to play the piano. You want to play the piano. Big difference in words there. And he
most
was right.
People,
I
most
didn't
people
want to learn to play the piano. I just wanted to sit down and play you know, I wanted chopsticks. I wasn't asking for a whole lot. But it's the same way with everything we do. Faith takes practice. Muscles take practice. I mean, ideas take practice. It all starts with just these little bitty baby steps. And, you know, you say, okay, I'm going to trust you here. And you always know that he followed through when you look back. And that's why he said always and over again, remember. Remember. And so I look back at my life and I think, okay, those times we were praying for a house. And we got this house, and it was just, we had asked him what we, you know, we laid it all out, and it was all there. And I kept saying afterwards, I wish I'd asked for two bathrooms. Because, you know, and all of the years that he provided for us, the times that money came in the mail, or that somebody gave us something that we needed, or all of those smaller things that lead you up to trust for when the big, miserable, rough starts and stops and going and misery it happens. You know he's going to walk you through that. He's not going to leave you. He's going to bring you out on the other side. One of the things that I have seen for writers, and I'm sure that this is true in a lot of, is that the writers that I know that have really blossomed and grown and gone on all went through the wilderness. That at some point in their lives, God took them out in the wilderness. And it feels like he takes you out there and he just leaves you. But only Jesus was out there by himself. The rest, and of course he had the angels and everybody that could have helped him if he would have asked. But that wilderness is the training ground for being able to be a really good writer. And I saw my writing career just really grow after the years after Marie died. And it was the wilderness, and that's part of it. But again, it's knowing, okay, you're going to walk me through this. You said you would. You don't change. You live up to your word. I know you will do that for me, too.
Well, Lorraine, let's talk about that wilderness part. And actually, I just flipped to a different slide because we all do want that burning bush. You know, you talked about Moses.
Oh, yeah. I've often said, you know, all I want is the sky. You know, just tell me what you want me to do. Write it in letters across the sky. Burning bush would be fine, you know, any one of those things. Break into a TV program, put it right on the screen.
Yeah.
That's fine with me.
I'm waiting for the, you know, behold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want the big voice. I want the Charlton Heston voice
yes,
coming out
that
of this
voice,
guy.
Not the still small voice. No, please.
No.
You know, and so that's what, years ago, it was, you know, God is just so incredibly wonderful with how he deals with each of us individually. And I said to him one day, I said, you know, God, I'm really hard of listening. You know, my hearing is great. It's the listening part that's the problem. So I said, would you please say things three times so that I know it's you? And you would not, I could write pages and pages of times where he has said things three times. And sometimes he said them six times. And I hear them from the most wild, I mean, if my dog started talking one day, I wouldn't be surprised. Just because God uses the most fascinating and incredible ways to break through to tell me something when it's time. And I've gotten now that, you know, I hear it the first time, and okay. And then I hear the, you know, again the second time, and I'm thinking, then it's just watch to see how creative he's going to be that I get it the third time. Absolutely incredible. He is so amazing that he, think about that. Okay, here's me. He cares enough about me to have listened to that prayer all of those years ago. And that must have been when I was about probably in my 30s that I prayed that. And I had three children at home, and that's frequently insane times. And I asked him that, and I still see him doing it over and over and over.
To tell you the three times. To tell you the three times.
Yep. And he knows that I'm hard of listening, and I keep hoping and praying, you know, that my listening is getting better.
Well, see, and that's the hard part, Lauren, about the, like in the book, No Distance Too Far with Astrid. And she's going to go to be this missionary in Africa for crying
out loud. Right, well, she feels like she's called to do that.
But then she goes to the school. She ends up coming back. And, you know, there's never, she keeps waiting for that burning bush skywriter to come out and say, you must go forth. And it's not happening. And
right.
I think that happens for so many of us. And I think you talked about in the book even about it's the circumstance that leads us that direction.
Well,
so how do we pay attention to that?
It can be circumstances. Because in song, you know, Sound of Music, remember where she says in that, you know, God closes a door. But when he closes the door, he always opens a window.
Opens a window.
Right. And that's one of those, that talk about a way to get an incredible message across. But it did. It's always stuck with me. He's going to open up the door. And so a friend of mine and I have a joke because she just doesn't want to let go of anything. And so our prayer has become, Lord, please close the door if you don't want me to go that way. But please let me get my fingers out first. You know, because I just have this picture of us, you know, digging in with our fingernails into the frame of the door, you know, because we want to hang on to it so bad because we're, you know, it takes trust to know that he closed that door and that he's going to open another one. But if it's not open immediately, there we are going, oh, just like that little puppy crying in the night.
I know. Well, do you think sometimes, though, that when we try to hold on to a closed door, that's part of the wilderness experience? Well, even in the book, it's kind of like, I think Astrid asked herself, you know, was this all for nothing? Was this a big detour? Why did I even go? Why did I waste time like that?
Right.
You know,
and the story that her mother, her mother or somebody shares with her is Abraham's story.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, okay, he says, take your son, your only son Isaac, and bring a knife and a bundle of wood, and we're going up to the mountain to have a sacrifice. Now, that talk about trust, you know, here Abraham is going along, and he's got his only son that he waited how many years to have? He's over 100 years old by now. And he's going on, and Isaac says to him, well, Father, where's the ram? And he says, God will provide. And he laid his son on the altar, and that's the story, the parallel that I said for Astrid. She had to lay what she loved on that altar and do what it sounded like didn't make a whole lot of sense. But then when she was obedient, God provided the ram and gave another way out and took her back to blessing. But we have to follow that and be that obedient in doing what, even if it doesn't, you know, it can be seem kind of crazy, but I'm sure Abraham wasn't excited about that for a little walk with his son. But he said, God will provide. And he did.
Right. And then I pulled up this picture that has a tree and there's a road kind of going around it because it's kind of the idea that the path is not necessarily straight and that you can't necessarily see all the way.
It sure isn't.
Well, sort of. No, it's not straight. And so,
the Bible talks about the straight and narrow, but I see that the straight and narrow path goes over hills and around hills and all kinds of things. So, straight and narrow.
That's
why
I think we talk about transitions and spirals too, because as we go through changes and as we grow and as we go through our own personal journeys, we call it a spiral. Because, you know, it's not straight, and things kind of loop back on themselves. And
that's right. And you go back and you're thinking, I thought we already went through this. Why do we have to go through this again?
Right.
And, you know, the best analogy on that one is peeling an onion. You just keep, you know, pulling off layers, and God takes you deeper in something. And, again, to reveal more to you about how much he loves you.
And going
isn't that exciting, though, that he does all this to just keep showing us how much he loves us?
No, I want the Skyrider, and I still want the big, huge neon sign.
I know, me too. I understand, and I frequently say the same thing. But I do trust that he's going to take care of it, and he's going to reveal it, and that I need to be – patience has not been one of my strong suits ever. But I need to be patient, and I need to be obedient, and that O word isn't exactly a joy and delight either.
No, and we talked about that last
week. Some of us are obedient more easily than others, I think.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I think in Ingeborg talks about, God gives you just enough light to see where to take that step.
I know, and you keep thinking, okay, look, give me a bigger flashlight and let me shine it out farther so that I can see a quarter of a mile down the road. And, you know, when we do things like that, I'm just absolutely convinced that God just laughs. You know how when our kids would come to us and they'd tell us a funny little story or something and we just loved it and chuckled? Well, it's the same way with him. You know, we're talking with him, we're dealing with him, and we're saying, you know, hey, Dad, come on, this isn't fair. Well, whoever said it was going to be fair? Nobody. That isn't what the one in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt be fair, or thou shalt get fair.
Thou shalt get fair. Well, and I think the question, too, is, you know, you mentioned Jonah earlier, and actually I think Mary or Holly may have even talked about Jonah, because we're talking about second chances. That's the thing, too. If I don't get a big sign or a big burning bush, and if it's something a little bit more subtle, what if I miss it? Do I get a second chance?
Well, okay, so when you're driving down the road with a map, you know, and a lot of people, they're GPS nowadays, and of course the woman's saying, what is this? Oh, I can't, because we don't have one. I am the GPS in our coach. But she says, what's the word she uses?
Oh,
anyway,
I know this one. Recalculating.
And I'm sure God looks at us a lot and says, okay, we're just going to recalculate this. Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of it. I will not leave you. No matter how badly you screw up, I will not leave you.
Yeah. That's
and so he gives us just the light for one more step, and that's where faith comes in, that faith and trust that says, okay, I can't see farther, but I will trust you as I take this next step. You've shown me where to go on this one. I'll trust you. I'll take this step, and then I'm counting on the fact that you're going to show me the next one. And if there's a big cliff right in front of us, you're going to turn me around and send me the other way.
No, I know. I think we just all have a hard time thinking we're going to take control over that. I think it's a control thing,
cause
too,
we,
right?
You know, as human beings, we want to control things. You know, I mean, how many control freaks do you know? Some of them are more control freaky than others, but we have a tendency to do that because he created us with a mind, and I keep wondering, you know, if he ever regretted that, but, you know, a mind of our own. But the whole joy, you know, is in that then when we choose to listen to him and to let him guide us. And I'm not saying it's easy because every once in a while I find, okay, I'm screwed up again. Here I am. And I wasn't listening and I've gone. But I know now that whatever I do, it's not irreparable. You know, that somehow he will turn that around and make it function, make it work. And I'll learn through it and we'll keep on going. He's not going to let me go. And he's not that big puppeteer up there that just says, oh, you did that. You did that back. You're snip, snip, snip on the strings, and we're on our own. No, he's not going to do that.
Wow. then, so what about for you, though, because we've talked a lot about some things that you've been through, but when have you felt like you had a God-sized dream and you had to have faith and courage? What do you think would have been a really good example for you?
Oh, the writing.
The writing.
When I, because I knew that I'd always wanted to be, that I wanted to write horse books for girls, and I hadn't planned on going to that writer's conference. I didn't even know about it. My mother called and told me about it. And then when I said, well, I couldn't go because I didn't have any money, I had no time, yada, yada, all the things we always do. She called me, and besides that, I was going to be on jury duty. And she called and said, if I pay your way, will you go? And then I called jury. Well, you know that in order to get off jury duty, you have to present your death certificate. and I called the lady, and she said, no, dear, I think that's a good thing. You better go to that. I mean, now, come on, tell me that
you called
the
Back up. You called the jury duty lady, and she said, that's a really good idea. You should go to the writer's conference?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, I mean, can you look at something as, you know, because I'd never been called to jury duty before. I didn't really, you know, this was back when I was in my late 30s. But I knew everybody said that, you know, if you get called, you better be there. They're going to throw you in jail for the rest of your natural life. And, you know, those horrible things. And so, anyway, I called her, and she was just so nice about it. And she said, no, I think you should do that. And I went. And so God provided the timing. He provided the money. He opened the doors. He informed me about it in the beginning. It was just him putting his foot in the middle of my back and saying, now go. And he's guided this step by step for how many years now? A lot.
But Lorraine, that was the thing, too. When you started to write, how did that, did you write stories on scraps of paper at home? Did you read to the kids? I mean, how did you really
I've been reading to my kids ever since they were born. In fact,
yeah.
I was reading to my kids before they were born because I've always been a reader, and I love to read, and I love to read aloud. And I knew that I wanted to write horse books for girls, but I had no idea. If somebody would have told me at that point, okay, Lorraine, you're going to write written, you know, 69 books in this next 30 years, and you're going to have done all the things, you know, gone to the Kentucky Derby, written about horses for that, you're going to have written romances, you're going to have gotten to know the Bjorklands through Anne Blessing and all of this, I'd have kind of looked at them and gone, you've got to be kidding. But God doesn't, you know, part of the reason he shows us only step by step is because then we don't have time to get afraid and go back and say, well, I can't do that. So step by step he takes you, you know, you don't have this horror of what's coming around. I mean, for me the analogy on this is walking in the dark, because I can scare myself so nutsy in the dark. I totally understand small children and being afraid of the dark, and knowing that I'm one of God's small children, I can still be afraid. But, you know, you've got the flashlight, okay, but if you shine it up way ahead, it doesn't show. So you shine it right down at the ground one step at a time, and then you can't see what's coming to be afraid.
Wow, good advice, really good advice.
And it's the choice. It's always the choice. And you choose, and you started out by just small things, little things, just like you didn't expect that toddler to run a marathon. God doesn't expect us to do that either. He takes us step by step. He gives us the job. He gives us the guidance. He gives us the skills. He gives us the dreams. I know the Bible talks about dreams so often. And so I didn't know at the time that that was a God-sized dream. And I think a lot of times we might not know that it is, but
you talked about that on we talked about that on Mary DeMuth's blog when you did the guest post this week, and you said, you know, about how do you know it's a God-sized dream, and can you say that part again that you wrote about, because you were talking about how do you know it's a God-sized dream?
Well, I think one of the ways you learn that it's a God-sized dream is if all the pieces are falling into place. Like for me, yes, I loved writing. Had I done a lot of writing? Well, yeah, I had, actually, when I looked back, again, looking back and realizing that he's been training you all along to get ready for this. And then, but to write for publication and to write a whole book, that was a whole different story than what, you know, what I had had done before. And so he was, there again, he was back doing the small steps, training me to be ready for this dream when it was time to put his foot in the middle of my back and say, go. Mm-hmm. And so I've never had a dream to run in the Olympics. Never. Never entered my mind. But I've always had a dream to write. So he gives us the dreams, and I think sometimes we're born with them. We just don't know it until he begins to reveal things step by step.
Wow. So, well, I'm going to take us to one more thing. We talked last week with Mary about taking a leap of faith.
Right.
And I love this picture because this little girl is looking happy. She's not afraid. And she's leaping into her father's arms. And Mary
talked
wonderful?
About...
Isn't that cute picture? And no, it's not a picture of Mary, but it is a very
right.
cute picture. And but Mary used that dirty O word, you know, the obedience word.
Mm-hmm.
And then she used the word I like even less, discipline, the D word. And
I
talked
know.
About that. So, if,
and you know, D
like
O is
not,
dead on arrival, but we don't want to do that either.
No. But you know, kind of to sum up too, what you're saying about a leap of faith. You know, you're saying take
baby
steps.
Well, see, she says a leap of faith, and I say taking baby steps. And, you know, they're two different pictures, but they're both going toward the same thing. And we do take leaps of faith frequently. I was working for a while, and we decided that I could quit work for 6 months. But talk about a leap of faith, because we couldn't live on one salary at that point, and we still had debts up the kazoo from the years that Wayne was, you know, the lumber industry died, and he was a carpenter. I mean, when you look back and you think of all those things, you think, good grief, how did we get through that? Well, we know how we got through that. God just took us through, you know, step by step.
Mm-hmm.
But he asked me to move to California. I wasn't going to move to California. Talk about a leap of faith. It felt like I was flying off a cliff.
I know the feeling.
Right, and I, you know, keep telling everybody now, do never, never tell God I never. I mean, that's just not very bright. I will never, God, I will never. Okay, fine. And it's going to often be, God, I will never do this again, which hopefully you'll live up to that, but how many times you screw up.
Right.
And then the other one is that, well, I will never do that. And I remember learning in a very young age with my children, I never, ever said, my children will never. I learned that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're set out, they're going out there to make you a liar as quick as they possibly can.
And they're going to... Do you think?
Yeah, and so you don't say, my child will never, just like God knows, he probably doesn't say much about that either, my child will never. Well, look what my children have done. One of the wonderful quotes that I heard one time that I just loved was, somebody was complaining to God about their kids, what their kids had done, and they've got a kid in prison or whatever, and all these terrible things going on, and God said to him, well, look at my children.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, when you look at God as the Father, I mean, sometimes he's, yeah, and that the other thing is that he knows what we're doing, so. But but that's part of it. That faith thing that just is a choice. I will do this. I make this choice, and I will live up to this. I will do it.
Yeah, and then
I will trust.
And then you talked about trust, and then I pulled up to Psalm 91, because
yes.
I asked you, I tried to say, okay, what's Ingeborg's favorite Bible passage? But then I said, what's yours? And you said, they're the same. Right, so Psalm 91. So I popped this up, and only the first four verses. And yes, for my friend Judy out there, I know that these are itty-bitty things to see and doing the best we can. So just you got to go look it up somewhere else. But I wanted to at least pop it up because I feel bad that the font is so small.
I love that.
On these slides.
We'll rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Just think of that. That he will cover you with his feathers. Under his wings you'll find refuge. He'll hold you in the palm of his hand and hold you against his heart. What incredible, incredible faith pictures he gives us. And these are promises. This is a promise. I will do that. And if you put I will cover you with my feathers. Under my wings you will find refuge. My faithfulness will be your shield and rampart.
Wow.
You know,
beautiful.
He does that. He says, I will do this. And I haven't caught him lying yet.
That's
I quit looking, I think, finally.
Quit looking. I'm going to move us because I want to get us into some question and answers because we've got some questions that have been coming in.
Okay.
But I also wanted to share, per our promise, Holly and Dayspring has been providing us Bible verses, too, to take us through the series. And this is part three of the verses from Holly and from Dayspring. So I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that they're here. And when you get the slide set, you'll be able to get the printout of this. But it kind of basically echoes what you're saying. God hears you when you pray, and that God strengthens you, and God watches over you. So as you had just
said. He said so. He promised. Promises a promise is a promise.
And he will do it. So.
And he will do it because he's not like us where we screw up and don't live up to it. He always lives up to his words.
Wow.
That's one, I think, you know, in my mind, I just think about that. That's one of the things that makes it almost hard to believe is because, you know, we can only look at what we do and around us. And we see us, you know, making, you know, promises all the time and not keeping them. And so that's why it takes that stretch of faith, that trust to say that God does not renege on his promises. Not like us.
Right. God's not us.
That's
good
right. Good thing.
Good thing. Good thing.
Yep.
Well, I just wanted to let everyone know that's on the call today that I invite you to join us as the journey continues because we've opened up a lot of questions and a lot of different topics over the last 3 weeks. So Bridge Light is offering, and actually it's me doing it, is a group coaching opportunity to go deeper inside these topics. The information is on the website if you would like to look at that, and we will explore the different areas as we all spiral through our ups and downs and ins and outs. So I invite you to look at that as an option. So, Lorraine, I'm going to take us into questions and answers. So I'm going to go right to the ones that have been sending in from the web, and then I'll check the phone queue and see what we have there. But I'm going to take us right into some questions. Okay. Let me just hit the button here. So I've got a question for you from Trudy, and it says, But what if it feels like we have to step off the big cliff in front of us and trust him to catch us? How do we know he wants us to take the risk of something seeming so impossible?
It's interesting how often we look at that we think we're stepping off a cliff. You know, and you don't see the cliff until you're right up to the edge, and then there you are looking down. But he says over and over, and this is where I go back to the promises. Go to the scripture, dig out some promises that you can put your name in. I will never leave you nor forsake you. For me, it's God says to me, Lorraine, I will never leave you nor forsake you. He says that to me. And he says that to everybody. And when you come up to what looks like a cliff, he's going to provide the path. You just have to get there and take that step. And yes, it looks terribly scary, but he is right there. He said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And I memorize those promises, and I hang on to the promises. And when the doubts are starting to come, I just start saying over and over again, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Jesus is my Savior. Jesus is my Shepherd. And the doubt and the fear will go away. And the more you practice doing that when things were easier, the more easily you're going to slip into that when things are tough. And so you do that to be prepared. Hang on to the promises. And you have to know them.
But I understand like what Trudy is saying. Sometimes it feels like even that very first step.
Right.
That's the heart, that baby step.
And there you are going, you're just teetering. You know, like you're on the end of the diving board, and you know that you're going to dive off that, and you're scared, and yet you know. And so there you are, teetering on the edge. And so you start filling your mind and with the promises so that you're willing to take that next step.
Wow.
I will never leave you before and I thank you.
Well, Trudy, I hope that helps. And if you figure out those verses, you share them with me.
So. Yeah, well, but go through and just start looking up the promises in the Bible. And it is a book full of promises. If he promised the Israelites, the promise is for us. When he promised it to anybody, the promise is for us. So you need to memorize them, have them in your head, and be able to call on them in those times when you know, you think that there isn't an answer. But the beauty of all of this is that the Holy Spirit is right there, willing to put to bring those to your mind, what you already have in your mind.
Right.
So again, he's going to do it for us.
Well, then, Lorraine, here's another question. This comes from Tina. How do you determine, or how do we determine, when it's a closed door from God or a wait?
Wait it out. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. We're up against the door, okay? And so then that means you either go right or left. So there you are thinking, okay, that door's closed, so I'm going to go right or I'm going to go left. And so you can sit there and wait until you're absolutely sure what God is doing, or you can start taking the step to the way that seems most likely, knowing that if you are going the wrong way, he will stop you and turn you around. You know that. He said so. I will guide you. I will be a light unto your path, a lamp unto your life.
Mm-hmm.
He said that. And so sometime it is wait, but sometime it is, you know, he doesn't say you have to take, you know, giant steps. He just says, you know, just start walking down this way. Take little baby steps. They're safer. So, you know, you don't have to take big giant steps all at once. And by the time he asks you to take a giant step, he's built your faith enough so that you can do that.
Okay.
Okay. You don't have to trust me. Just trust
Tina.
What his word says.
Tina
trust
and I are
the
like,
word.
Okay.
Know the word and trust the word.
But I think that's good advice. I have this picture in my mind too of like the little baby shuffle. I'll take the little baby shuffle.
Right. So. And that's why he padded our rears, I think, so when we sit on them, it doesn't hurt so bad.
Right. Now, and this next question comes from Debbie. Now, Lorraine, you're going to remember Debbie because you went through her purse at the Mount Hermon Writers Conference. Right.
Yes.
Yes, and I'm so glad it was her and not me.
Yeah, me too.
For everybody else on the phone, Lorraine was talking about at a writer's conference what was how to learn about people and characters and develop characters. And so she actually took poor Debbie's purse and went through it with everybody. We learned a lot about Debbie from her purse contents, right?
It was fun. It is fun. And I've done that a lot in creating characters. And we do learn a lot. It's just however we're going to learn about the people we're going to write about.
Right. So the
and
question,
Debbie was very brave.
She's very brave, and she's very gracious. So, but her question is, how can I tell what I want is what God wants for my life? And if, like, I think she says, I want to be a published writer, but is that my idea or God's? Am I putting undue pressure on myself, or should I just relax and write for fun?
That's a whole series of questions there, of course.
Well, she's got to put
part
them
of it
all
again
at once.
Is just following the light that you have. Your job isn't to say, to be published, your job is to become the best writer that you can be and do the process. And then God chooses, you know, who, when. But first of all, he's not going to let it happen before you're ready for it. And so when we're working along that line, you know, you do what you're learning, you learn what you're learning, you keep doing what you've learned, and that's what he's asking you to do at this point. The publishing is going to come in its time. And there are a lot of people, well, in fact, I know one person long years ago, I thought, sure, that woman would never, ever be published. You know, like, do something else because this is not your gig.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kept on going. She really felt that this is where God was leading her. And I never did tell her, don't do this, because I don't think that's my job. That's God's job. And so if she wasn't going to be, you know, she would have eventually, I think, that the dream would have dissipated. But she kept on, and she's been published a lot of times. It's just amazing to me. She sends me a little thing every once in a while that says, well, I sold an article to yada yada, and I'm just flabbergasted, but it's wonderful because her faith just grew all of those years, and she kept working and working and working. And along the way, he's going to give people who are doing that special things will happen, that they'll find out that their writing was used in a way that they never even dreamed of, and that's again one of his great delights is in surprising us. And so I think that if it isn't a God dream, it's going to disappear. And a lot of time, I know a lot of people who've had to put writing on hold because of what was going on in their life, but then because it was what God was calling to do, when they'd gone through whatever the wilderness was, possibly, or whatever was happening, then when they came out on the other side, the dream was even stronger.
You know, I have a young friend, and she's got some small children, and that was her concern. She said how she's having a hard time writing and raising the children.
Right.
In a marriage.
And I really admire
wife.
Something like that's in that. And yet I have another friend who raised 5 children, wrote 1 page a day, and you know, she could turn out a book a year.
Wow.
So part of it is learning how to be creative, and there are women, men both, who are able to do this. Some of them have to put it on hold, and that's okay. God didn't ask me to start it when my kids were little, which is a good thing, because I wasn't disciplined enough to be able to do that. And yet, for other people that they are, they're able to work through it all at the same time. But it isn't like God's going to say, okay, that's it, your dream's gone, you didn't do it right now, it's over. Nope, second chances.
Okay. And that's the wilderness, and back to that wilderness part you're talking about.
It can be. And, you know, don't you know, fight against the wilderness thing either is some advice that somebody gave me. And, of course, that
I
don't
do
anything
without
you. Kicking and – yeah, right, kicking and screaming. But God is – he loves me. He loves you. He's not going to pull the plug. You know, he'll find a way. God will make a way. He said so.
That's good. So keep on kicking, Debbie.
Yeah.
Keep on kicking. And I got another question here, and it's coming in from Joe Carroll, and you also know my friend Joe Carroll.
I do.
And she's a sweetheart. And she says,
and she got into my class by accident and wasn't planning on writing fiction. And now she's almost done with a mystery novel.
Isn't that amazing?
I think it's a kick in the pants. I love it.
I think it's wonderful. So. And she says, do you think Sarah participated in her own faith walk up the mountain that she knew Abraham was taking? And she said, I asked
how did
because
she,
of
how did walk. How did she know he was doing that? Maybe he didn't tell her.
Listen, it says, I asked because our walks often include spouses, and I've never
That's
heard
true.
Anything mentioned about Sarah's faith.
I agree. But remember, Sarah, I love it. Okay, so you're the wife in this situation. Your husband comes home and says, God has told me that we're going to go to a far country. I don't know where we're going. I don't know how long it's going to be to get there, and I'm not even sure what we're supposed to take along, but you get everybody packed now, and we'll start out. You tell me what wife is going to just go, oh, yes, dear. Or maybe there are wives that would just say yes, dear, but I'm not one of them.
You would have said, you've got to be kidding.
That's right. You've got to be kidding. You, God who? I would love to write Sarah's story sometime the way I think she really was.
So Joe, I think Lorraine's saying $5 says that he didn't tell Sarah.
Oh, I don't know. He had lots of slaves. He told them, get us all ready to go because my wife's not going to want to do this.
Well, let me ask you this. This came up a couple of sessions ago, but it was talking about kind of a similar, not the same question, but kind of tangential to this. It said, well, what about spouses? If you have a God-sized dream, how do you explain that sometimes to a spouse that really doesn't understand what it is that you are really feeling called to do? What advice would you give somebody for that?
That is so hard.
It's hard.
You know, because that is true, and a lot of times spouses are kicking and screaming, too. I think that you don't just dump it in somebody's lap. Well, God told me to go write, you know, 30 books at 100,000 words each, and you're supposed to support me in all these years because I'm not going to do anything other than write. Well, come on. But it's a case of loving each other enough to being willing to cut that other person some slack. You know, I have to laugh because I have always been a really good starter of things, but not necessarily a good finisher. And so I know when I started out with the writing, Wayne kind of was most likely going, yeah, right, okay. Well, she'll get rid of this one. You know, she'll do this for a while, and then she'll go on to something else. And so, but bless his heart, he, you know, supported me at the time, and I was doing it. And so it's how do you build enough of a team effort between the two of you before this starts, you know, so that one is going to go along with the other. How about the wife that the husband comes home and says, well, I left my job. I'm going into the ministry. Panic city, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But again, God can change that spouse's idea too, you know, to go along with this. And so then you pray about it and you keep talking about it and you don't, and then you start doing it. And, but you try not to do it at the sacrifice of other things, at least in the beginning.
Right.
But, you know, for us, this has become our livelihood. So, you know, Wayne's really grateful.
We're grateful for him being this way too.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's a real team effort. And, you know, the marriages that do team effort for both, for what both spouses want to do, those are the marriages that just grow stronger and stronger and stronger.
Wow. Well, this kind of goes along the same line of questioning, but different question. This comes from Mary Ellen, and she wants to know, how did you get to California, and did you follow along willingly?
No, I didn't. That was one of those instances where God was saying, Lorraine, are you going to trust me? And when you're driving a car all by yourself and the tears are running down your face and you're, you know, ranting and raving and why are we doing this? And then God's just sitting there very quietly saying, Lorraine, are you going to trust me? No, I'm not going to trust you. I don't want to do this. But it's been a wonderful thing. It's been the best thing. But it's, again, it's that finally choosing to say, okay, all right, I'm doing this. But, you know, it goes back to the story of the two boys. You know, the one son says, oh, yeah, Dad, I'm going to do that. And he doesn't. And then the other one says, I'm not going to do that in this lifetime or the next. And then goes ahead and does it.
Wow. But then what did bring you out to California? Why did you decide to move?
We were only going to be there for 2 years. And then I realized after living in Western Washington State most of my life, where it's a lot of gray days, that I could have sunshine in the morning more than two days in a row. And I fell in love with that, and it's just been a wonderful thing for us. And God knew.
Wow. It's beautiful. Well, we're getting to the end of the time, but I have one last question. This comes from Anne, and she wants to know, what can we pray for you about? How can we pray for you?
You know, this is, we're talking about faith and all of this stuff, and the prayer that I always ask people is that I will keep my butt in the chair and get the books done on time. And that's definitely theological, right?
It is. It
uh-huh.
is. Because that was my last question. When are you going to tell us what happened to Astrid?
Well,
that's
the book will be out in March.
In March?
In March.
That was mean.
A Heart for Home comes out in March. I have finished writing it finally. And it's in the editorial process, and we'll see it in bookstores latter part of February.
Because, you know, we want to know what happened. That was a cliffhanger.
I did, too. I really wanted to know what happened.
Well,
and
right,
I think you'll have
cliffhanger.
I think it's going to be a pleasant surprise. Some people aren't going to like me very well because they've been asking for a different ending. So, anyway. How about that for a cliffhanger?
That is definitely a cliffhanger, and we will pray for you to keep writing. And I just want to thank you for being with us. It's great wisdom. We always appreciate your wisdom
and your
humor.
My pleasure to be here.
And your guidance. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for participating today. And we'll let
Thanks
you know when
Thanks for coming
the
and taking the time. And I hope that these are some things that you can hang on to.
They are, definitely. I am sure. So thank you so much. And on behalf of Bridge Light, we just really appreciate you participating. And everybody have a fantastic, wonderful fall day. So
great.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Right.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the